afternoon, everyone. My name is Amy, and I am here for the 5-H show. And the 5-H's stand for health, harmony, happiness, humor, and humanity. And I am continuing with my month-long deep dive into 5G and electromagnetic frequency pollution. And we've had a few different episodes here on the 5-H show on Sundays, which have covered this topic. And today I am super excited. Today we have Vermonter Annette Smith from the Vermonters for a Clean Environment. And she's going to be calling in here in just a moment. And we are really lucky to have time with her today on this Sunday. What is today anyway? May 19th. We are really lucky to have Annette Smith phoning in today because she has been fighting for decades alongside Vermonters, helping to clean up our environment in all sorts of ways. All sorts of ways. She has stood shoulder to shoulder with you and with me and with all of us, with our neighbors, as they struggle against all of these different things that keep impeding on our environment, right? Everything from, industrial scale energy projects, right? And then also electromagnetic frequencies, things like towers going up and all sorts of things. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with Annette. Hold on, I think maybe the phone is ringing. Hold on. Hello? Oh, hold on. So I think she'll be calling in just a second here, folks. I'm just really getting excited because I have to get my directions out here for how to pick up the phone. There we go. Yeah, so Annette Smith, if you want to look up Vermonters for a Clean Environment while we're talking, you can learn a little bit about what her organization does. And you can find that at vce.org. VCE, like Vermonters for a Clean Environment. We're about to have Annette Smith, who was Vermonter of the Year at one point here. And let me see, I'm pulling up, I've got a biography for Annette. Annette Smith is Executive Director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, a grassroots organization. Oh, and here she is. So hold on one, folks, I'll bring her right on. Hold on. Hello, Annette. Hello, Annette. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Oh, thank you so much. I know you were just saying it's such a beautiful day, and I really appreciate your time.
Well, I'm taking a break from digging in the garden.
Oh, fantastic. Very many bugs over by you?
Oh, not too bad. A lot of birds, though. A lot of bird activity.
Yeah, they're singing like crazy out there. It's so wonderful. Yeah, so I was just finishing your little biography here. Let me just finish this. Annette Smith is Executive Director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, a grassroots organization that has been working with Vermonters for 25 years to raise our voices and hold corporations accountable. As Executive Director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, Annette has organized communities, testified before government boards, and advised residents who felt powerless in the face of state bureaucracies and big business. So you're a hero in my book, Annette.
I'm what you call a reluctant activist, but 25 years, can't believe I'm still doing this.
Yeah, so that's an accurate count there, 25 and counting. What got you started?
I literally crawled out of the woods to fight a billion-dollar natural gas power plant and pipeline project that was proposed for Bennington and Rutland counties. And I heard about it. I researched it. I said, they can't do this to Vermont. I hand milk a cow, and the day that I dried off my cow, I went out to a lot of select boards, and I thought that in 2 months while my cow was growing her calf, that I could stop it, and then after 2 months, when she had her calf, I would get my life back. That didn't happen. The gas project didn't happen either.
Oh, good.
But then a multinational mining company, Omia, announced they wanted to open a new mine a mile from my house. And I said, I'm not going to take on Omia. Their motto is crush them, like they do with rock. But I was sort of drafted into it. And after a couple years, I stopped saying I want my life back.
It sort of became your life.
Well, it is very rewarding, actually. It's much easier, though, to assist people in communities where I'm not personally affected. But I certainly know what it feels like because both of those projects affected me personally. And, you know, overnight, I became a NIMBY when they published the route that the pipeline was going to cross my property. And I had been researching gas power plants and didn't understand why anyone wanted to build 1,350 megawatts of natural gas power plants in Vermont. So that's how I got my start, and I've learned a lot about energy issues and about land use, and why we've seen a lot of telecom issues in the last 5 years.
Yeah, the landscape is always changing with these technologies, right, that are changing, and then also the propaganda around them changes.
Yeah, the whole 5G thing, that was a lot of hype that in certain respects failed, although the term has continued. But certainly around 2019 and then during the pandemic, we saw a lot of activity that was very hard for people to respond to. So there are new towers and new tower companies, and every time we're contacted about it, the first thing that people talk about is the health effects. And that's something that's preempted by the 1996 telecom law, so it becomes very challenging to be effective in addressing these types of developments.
Okay, yeah, so let's break this down a little bit. So you were saying health effects are the first thing. So people call you, right? They call up Vermonters for a Clean Environment?
That's right, yeah.
And they have this concern because a tower is going on and going up usually near them. It usually is sort of a NIMBY, you know, response, but that's okay, right? We're protective of our territory.
Well, there's been a change, actually, which is provoking that. In the past, we saw more towers up on top of mountains, and they're aesthetically not pleasing. And there's a New York Times article that in 1998, Senator Patrick Leahy said he didn't want Vermont to become the pincushion state. But it kind of got to be gloves off under especially Governor Shumlin, where towers got sited in places that I really can't believe they were put. What happened more recently, though, is that towers have been proposed much closer to where people live, and village centers, historic village centers, and that's a whole new approach. Part of it was AT&T building out its first network, but part of it was this millimeter wave 5G that was planned, that there was concern there would be thousands of antennas needed, tens of thousands of antennas needed for this frequency to be deployed. And it hasn't really been in the press much, but that kind of failed. You might have read stories about people's phones heating up and that the signals didn't carry through walls. And so it quietly got that whole idea got abandoned. But we still are seeing, for instance, right now, there's been both an AT&T and a Verizon proposal for towers in Manchester, which has a lot of traffic for shopping because it's got an outlet centers. And so what these companies are trying to do is get their towers and antennas in places where they can handle a lot of data. So it's really about the data. And it's not so much about coverage anymore, although there are things going on, including in your area, where Warren dealt with a proposal by Verizon that got very contentious and challenging and has since been abandoned, but I'm sure they're looking for something else. But the location was directly opposite the access road to the Sugarbush ski area, and it became evident that it wasn't about coverage for people who live in Warren. It was about making use of all the data and making money off of all the data that the skiers generate, because skiing is now very dependent on cell phones and technology.
Oh, so there's some data mining of folks. It's not just
right.
Like we're helping you access your data, but we're actually mining data from you.
And so they're trying to increase the capacity to handle all the data. You know, when you're skiing, I guess everything is tied to ordering dinner on your cell phone and lift tickets, and it's all done through cell phones. And so the companies are looking to put towers where they can make a lot of money. So Manchester is another area that's typical of that sort of thing. We've seen a lot of antennas go up in Stowe. There's another one in your area that has been in the works since 2019, and it is an AT&T effort to what they claim will provide cell coverage for the Granville Gulf. And long before I ever heard of this proposal, I have considered that stretch of road there to be one of the most beautiful places in Vermont. Mm. And you should keep your hands on the wheel and not be playing with your cell phone while you're driving through there, and stop to see the waterfall. But AT&T is trying to put a tower up pretty much in the middle of nowhere, and they had a lot of opposition from neighbors who live to the east on North Hollow Road. Again, people who would never, ever in a million years expect they would be fighting a cell tower.
Mm-hmm.
And they have coverage. And because of that, AT&T proposed to move it to a different location. And Agency of Natural Resources opposed that because of impacts on forest fragmentation and bear habitat. So then AT&T came back. So this has been going on for 5 years, came back to the original location, which is very unfair to the people who live there, who now have to engage in the regulatory process at the Public Utility Commission. And meanwhile, with the first iteration, it was evident from an expert hired by the Department of Public Service and an expert that the neighbors found that it wasn't going to provide the coverage that AT&T claimed it would cover. So it's and only the town can get standing on coverage, and so it gets very complicated when you're trying to do something I don't really understand why they're pursuing it, but it involves the town, it involves the neighbors, it involves aesthetics, and AT&T, who apparently has so much money that they're just going to drag this out forever until they get their permit.
Yeah, so thank you so much, and thank Vermonters for a Clean Environment for helping people, because the process is really complicated, isn't it? Like where you can get a toehold and what arguments you're even allowed to make.
Mm-hmm. It's something that, as many people have said, the Public Utility Commission and their process, they speak another language. And so the first thing that people have to understand is what can they talk about and what can't they talk about. And at the Public Utility Commission, health issues are off the table, property values are off the table. But unless it affects the whole town's grand list, and you have to prove that it would reduce the grand list. Not an easy thing to do. And then you always have this, it's a divisive topic, because you always have the people that say, I want better cell service. And sometimes they're, and often, they're related to the property owner who's leasing the land. So you get the friends and family public comment at the PUC. And it's very painful to see the communities divided that way and pitting neighbor against neighbor. We've heard all kinds of dollar amounts for what people get for leasing these. In the old days, I used to hear maybe $5,000, and I don't know if that was annual or monthly. But last year, I heard that AT&T was offering somebody in a different town $200,000.
Wow, like a year or just period?
I don't know the terms, but it's still a shocking amount of money, no matter how long it is.
Right, and interesting that's not disclosed, because
it's all private, that's right. And actually, two people turned it down before the third took it.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, there are a lot of pockets in Vermont that don't have cell service. And it's a challenging problem because it comes down to what people want or what they need. And anybody now who has fiber optic or will be getting fiber optic can use the Wi-Fi off of their fiber optic to access cell service. So it becomes driving. So there's the argument that, well, we need it for public safety, except there's so much distracted driving. Is that really what it's going to lead to? And because of Vermont's topography, we are never going to get universal cell service. And Governor Peter Shumlin actually said that. It's not realistic. Most people don't say it, though. It's just this, you know, want, want, want. And driving in your car is one of the worst places to use a cell phone because of the metal car and the radiation that you're getting. And if you want to, you know, maximize your exposure, go ahead and use it in the car. And,
oh.
And that, now with all these sensors on electric vehicles and things, there are people who are sensitive to it, and they can't be in those types of cars now. There are people who can't be around this kind of technology. And it's, an equity issue, an ethical issue. There are people who can't go into the state house because they have brain implants, and so it's not a technology that you can have if you have some things in your brain. It's not my favorite topic by any means, because there are so few ways to be effective in challenging bad siting. And since the companies are choosing the sites, they're not coming to the communities to say, we want to work with you to find a good site. They don't do that up front. And if they did, it would be more likely to generate better sites. However, it's always going to face the problem that, well, they're ugly, people don't want to look at them, and there are many people who, it might be a good site for a lot of reasons, but it also might be right next to somebody's home who doesn't want to live with those emissions. So on the local level, what we found is that it is quite fine to talk about the health effects. There is an experience in Worcester that we had a few years ago. Worcester is, you know, it's along Route 12, not a very trafficked road. Very, very good community in terms of community, you know, people working together. And this company that's new to Vermont called Industrial Tower and Wireless proposed a lattice tower. And it turns out it was the third one. They had already proposed and gotten certificates of public good for one in Eden along Route 100 and one in Fairfax. And when they came to Worcester, somebody found me, and I ended up making presentations to their planning commission and select board, who did what I recommend, which is before you invite the tower company in, which is usually what happens, the select board turns the meeting over to the company, and so it's the company's meeting. I suggested, and this was during the pandemic, you hold a meeting and hear from your people first and understand what it is people are saying and what they want. And they did have a hybrid meeting, so there were some people in person and some who were remote, and their planning commission and select board were both there. And it came out at the meeting that this tower was proposed to be about 350 feet from the home of a man whose daughter lived with him, who was, I don't know, she wasn't a child, she was an adult, but she had traumatic brain injury. And so the last place you want to be living is next to a tower that has antennas on it that's 350 feet away. That's kind of the worst impact zone. And so the community rallied around this man. And they then held a meeting with the company where the Select Board and Planning Commission first ask questions rather than, again, letting the company take over. And the landowner, to his credit, chose not to continue with the lease, and he dropped it.
Excellent. Oh, I'm loving this, that in a way, you know, by putting it back onto people's free choice. I mean, it is, you know, they do have to approach landowners and find willing participants. And if folks are informed enough, I mean, I love that process, how you went through, you know, how it was adjusted to allow for people to be heard.
Then we've had a couple of other experiences with the same company, one in Enosburg, which is way up north, and one in Ira, which is near where I am, in southwestern Vermont. And by the way, this company says they want to blanket the whole state with these lattice towers. And they're about 180 feet tall, usually. They're not for cell service, which is they're kind of an odd thing. They have their own proprietary radio service, and so they have these, what they call whip antennas, that they put on top of the towers, and then they leave space for other companies to co-locate. The one in Fairfax went up, and a year later, nobody has co-located on it.
Oh.
So nobody understands. I mean, the one in Ira is along Route 133, again, a very low-traffic road. It's just... People are like, who are your customers? Well, it's, you know, people in business who drive by in their trucks.
Hmm. Wow.
Local businesses. Well, Ira doesn't have any except farms. But in both Enosburg and Ira, what happened was that the Select Board and Planning Commission stayed out of it because of their relationship with the landowner. Either they were friends of his, or they just, you know, in another case, he was bullying the Select Board, and the Select Board didn't want to poke him anymore. So there are all these local dynamics that take place, but the public utility process gives substantial deference to the recommendations of the Select Board, the Planning Commission, and the Regional Planning Commission, and the town plan or telecom bylaw, if a town has a telecom bylaw, which I highly recommend people have. Mm-hmm. Warren has been through a lot of challenging updates to its whole land use development regulations, and included that in that was an update to the telecom bylaw, which initially was not well done and reduced a lot of the protections that had been in it, and I believe they got put back in. But it was concerning to see that there's a company in Vermont that's advising towns on updating. They're actually being hired, and Warren hired this company, and they are gutting the protections for cell towers. So you literally could have sited a cell tower right where you are and had it been fine if those hadn't been fixed before the land use regulations got adopted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's interesting that in the case of the Ira one, which is behind the back of an area and the edge of a mountain that is one of the most beautiful areas. It's just, I've always been struck by how beautiful it is. That one got approved, and I thought it could be denied on aesthetics. But the Enosburg one, the Regional Planning Commission weighed in and said, well, this doesn't comply with our regional plan. And so it was denied. And this company, instead of appealing the denial to the Vermont Supreme Court, appealed to federal court. And there was a hearing on the appeal on, I guess there were two competing motions for summary judgment. The Vermont Attorney General's office is representing the state in the case. And so there was a hearing just on Friday about it. I don't know what happened, but these companies are very litigious and engaging in the process over siting of these towers is not fun.
Right. And the success that you've had is just amazing, but you have to be really tenacious and learn a lot really fast along the way. And then having someone with your experience is really essential.
The PUC process is very people describe it as torture or brutal, But I must say that the town process can be really challenging, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what went on in Warren, but we also, there was a tower proposed for Buffalo Mountain in Hardwick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these things come along where certain members of the town government have been very cozy and made all kinds of, you know, expectations with the developer, and then when it's finally announced, well, gee, it doesn't comply with the town plan. And so getting a town to actually say that or taking a position is not often easy, and I don't think it happened in that case, but the town plan itself speaks for itself, too. But it has to be written in a way that is something the PUC will give substantial deference to. So you have to be specific to the location. You have to use the words must. Must is better than shall. Should and endeavor don't matter, don't count. It's something that I do assist towns in how to write enhanced energy plans so that they can be effective at the Public Utility Commission, because most of them are not. And it's almost an impossible thing to do.
So it seems like this is something that would be good to get ahead of in your town, even if it hasn't come up. But look at what your bylaws say and maybe work with you guys to improve them.
Yeah, in general, the thing that I think that we are looking at being the best thing to add to a telecom bylaw or put in place is a setback. So what's a safe setback? And there is
is there a say on it?
Right. So then you get, yeah, that gets into kind of, you know, do you want to enable these things? Whatever. So let's just say if you're on a town select board, you're stuck with the 1996 Telecom Act that says you can't say no to all towers. You have to allow for them.
Oh.
So how do we protect our people? And, well, you know, or the wildlife. That's a tough one. But there is New Hampshire is way ahead of us, and they had a commission on 5G, and it was very good. And they identified that 500 meters, or about 1,640 feet, was a safe setback. And that's consistent with the research that I've done, which the minimum that I've seen was about 1,200 feet. So anywhere in there. Now, some towns, they may have setbacks, but it may be only 200 to 500 feet. And who wants to live that close to a tower? And so that's a relatively easy thing to do. There are other standards that have been in town plans, such as the can't be more than 20 feet above or 10 feet above the height of the tallest trees. And that was one of the things that I think got taken out of the Warren Land Use Regulation bylaw that then got put back in. There can be, when you have zoning, there can be areas or districts where towers are allowed or are not allowed. In Manchester, both of the towers that were proposed, one by AT&T and one by Verizon, were both in districts where their land use regulations specifically say that telecommunications towers are not allowed in this district. So those are the sorts of things, as long as you have areas that they are allowed, that can be protected. But, oh, everything is changing so fast. I mean, we have this Starlink and if you want to avoid these technologies, it's becoming harder and harder and harder.
Yeah, and it's really time for folks to start to learn about them if people aren't already. I want listeners to know that I'm speaking with Annette Smith, the Executive Director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment. You can find out about Vermonters for a Clean Environment at vce.org. And we are getting a well-needed update on where is Vermont with this 5G technology, with these towers rolling out, with towns' rights and neighbors working through the process and improving the process. And on last week's show, Annette, I did cover New Hampshire's efforts in that department, you know, that they had this whole bulk of research that they had. Mm-hmm. The legislature had approved and actually ordered to be done. And then we just listened last week on my show to the House Science, Technology, and Energy House Committee in New Hampshire as they discussed Bill 1487, which was the result of all their research. And what it suggested, I wanted to get your opinion on this. They suggested this bill that that ended up dying on the wall. So this committee, after discussing it for like 5 minutes, decided not to take it up because it was unworkable and too expensive. Mm-hmm. Which is so sad because I don't know if that's the defeat of this entire effort in New Hampshire. It can't be, right? Because it's been decades, you know, they've been working on this for so hard. But this is what they were proposing, was to not allow, to go with warnings on the poles, so health hazard warnings, having a certain distance, I can't remember what it was, but making sure they were a certain distance, like you're saying, from homes and schools, having a setback. Mm-hmm. And then also that schools should all be wired and not be wireless. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, that one died on the wall. But what do you think, Annette? Is that going, would that be a good start? What do you think of that proposal?
Well, for Vermont, I have to start by saying you got to find someone who cares in the legislature. And it's been bleak. However, this year, to my surprise, and I knew nothing about it, a bill was introduced to ban cell phones in classrooms. And this is something that is going on all over the country. I mean, we do have some school districts in Vermont that have put in policies that kids can't use their cell phones in school. And so that's a start. It doesn't address the wireless technology that's in the schools, but, and in fact, during the pandemic, that's where we saw a lot of the build-out. We saw a lot of Microsoft 5G antennas going up on school buildings so that, you know, kids that didn't have technology at home could go and sit in the parking lot and download their homework. Was something that was already contracted for. The Scott administration entered into this contract with Microsoft back, I think, in 2017. But it really got built out during the pandemic. What happened with the Vermont bill on banning cell phones in schools was that the health commissioner came in and testified that he didn't support it. So it got turned into a study. It didn't die. I think it is progress. In the town next to me, in Tynemouth, someone hired a tech person to come in and measure what the kids were being exposed to in the school. It's a relatively very small school, and it was shockingly high. And it got the attention of, I think, somebody in the administration, but the school board members shut it down. So it, you know, it does cost money to hardwire the technology, but those are the things we should be doing. And I guess overall, the societal damage that's being done to our children through this, what's now, you know, widely acknowledged to be an addiction to cell phones, is truly alarming and getting a lot more attention, as it should. And so between distracted driving and what it's doing to young people who literally cannot put their phones away, it's very concerning. So the overall exposure, I mean, for people in their homes, it's easy, although most people don't even know that. So you get a computer. It's set up for Wi-Fi. You have a modem. It's all set up for Wi-Fi. We have in our area, Vermont Tel, our privately owned funny little phone company, we've gotten DSL and fiber optic long. We've had fiber optic since 2014. And when it was being put in, fortunately, people in another town came first. They asked to have the Wi-Fi turned off, and they didn't know what they were talking about. So by the time it got to me, they did know what they were talking about, and I turned the Wi-Fi off on the box, and I hardwire my computer. But I'm amazed at how many people don't even know that they can hardwire their computer. I mean, for a Mac computer, which I use, you have to get an adapter to plug in an Ethernet cable because they stopped putting Ethernet ports on, but that's not a big deal. And for the whole time during the pandemic, it just drove me nuts, because how much time did we all waste on Zoom with people fading in and out, and you can't, you know, they don't have good connectivity. Well, No, it's because they're using Wi-Fi. And if you hardwire, you have a much, much better connection. I talked to the tech guy at VTEL, and he said, yeah, I hardwire mine because cameras take so much of the bandwidth. So that's a simple thing that people can do. I talked to the Commissioner of Public Service about it, and the people in the Department of Public Service that they should do a, you know, this was during the pandemic. They should do a public service announcement that if you want to have a better experience on remote, that you hardwire. And it to me bypasses the whole health effect thing. I mean, you just the camera works better.
And it has to be more expensive to go wireless. I mean, all of this, you know, investment, we're talking oodles and oodles of money. So, you know, when they're saying that it's too expensive to hardwire, to me, I think, well, are you doing the full equation? You know, what about the other side?
Well, when you think about the infrastructure of schools and that you have to have wires, I mean, in Tynemouth, they did look at it. So I got a good picture of what it would be like. You know, having wires around, it gets complicated, but it's not impossible. Now, on the other side of things, like with cell phones and cellular exposure, there is a fellow in Rochester who did a lot of testing and measuring and found that for basic use, that your exposure to the radio frequency radiation for wireless compared to cell phones was dramatically less. So working off the cellular network, where a lot of people actually have poor reception, and so when you have poor reception, you're getting worse exposure. But he found that using Wi-Fi was much better. You know, the problem is for people who are what they call electrically sensitive, EHS is one term for it. When it happens, you don't go back from it. And so I have some sense of what it's like because I do have an old Mac little box I can plug in called Airport, and then I can plug the Ethernet cable into it, and I can have wireless. And if I forget about it, in about an hour I get a headache. And I talked to someone who had a lot of knowledge about this, and she said, you need to be careful because there is a tipping point with it. And if you get pushed over that tipping point, then you're really in trouble. You can't go to places. I mean, there are a lot of people who cannot go to stores that have Wi-Fi. They really have to limit their exposure. Now, when I say a lot of people, who knows how many people? I mean, people get headaches. Do they know that it's associated with their equipment? We were the organization that led the effort to enable people to opt out of smart meters, and that happened back in about 2011, 2012, because I saw what was going on in California and Maine, and so my staff person was in the State House. I said, just go to every committee where they're taking it up and ask to testify, and after about, I don't know, the fourth or fifth committee, the lobbyists for Green Mountain Power and Central Vermont Public Service reached out to him, and we brokered a deal, which wasn't good enough, and then it went to the legislature, and they made it better. And anybody who has a smart meter who doesn't want it can call their electric company and say, I don't want it, and they come and swap it out. Now, you don't get to keep your analog meter, but they put in something that, you know, there are issues. Some people say there are issues with it. I don't know. This technology gets very complicated, but... what we heard, we had a forum in the State House on 5G in 2019, and I was amazed. It was an opportunity for people to testify. We presented some information, and it was with a group in Brattleboro at the time, and they got the room 11 in the State House. I was amazed by how many people said, I had headaches, I couldn't sleep, I was nauseous, I had health effects, and I didn't know what it was from, and then I realized it could be my smart meter. And I got my smart meter taken out, and I got all better.
Wow.
Person after person after person said that. I had no idea what an effect it was having on people. And so, personally, for people who are, for whatever reason, in need of using a cell phone, there are some things that you can do. For instance, turn it off. And it don't keep it in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. I used to have a cell phone. I got rid of it during the pandemic because I didn't need it. But I keep it in a stainless steel soup pot with the lid on, even though it's turned off. So if it is emitting anything, it's not going anywhere.
A soup pot. I love that.
And, you know, people don't realize they can limit their exposure. Mm-hmm. These things have all kinds of antennas on them. And sometimes just turning it off doesn't actually eliminate the exposure. We have a number of meters that we lend out to people. Two of them are out on loan right now, both near towers where people wanted to know what was happening. One was a new tower, one's a tower that's been in place for a long time. I did want to talk about what's changed with 5G, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of misunderstanding, misimpression. When it was first coming out, I looked at it and I said, is this a lot of hype? And the former FCC Commissioner Tom Wheeler, who had come from the wireless industry, CTIA, he gave a speech. He was appointed by Obama. He gave a speech that, we are going to have 5G in every corner of the country, every little remote area. That was about the millimeter wave technology above 24 gigahertz. And what we have in towers around here is about 2.9 gigahertz. So these millimeter wave technologies were being auctioned off, and if you want to go higher, about 90 gigahertz is what the military can use for crowd control, and it's described as being like a furnace. So somewhere in that 24 to 90 gigahertz range was what they were considering, or what they tried to build out, and it failed. It didn't work. And I was amazed to find a couple years later that Tom Wheeler submitted testimony to a Senate committee in Congress, and he said that we have to have fiber optic to the last mile, and that satellite and antenna technology is not the solution. I was amazed. I don't know if he mentioned satellites, but he did talk about that he was no longer pushing wireless technology.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that was sort of my. I'm like, what happened to this millimeter wave stuff? So when for quite a while, I would download the specifications from EPUC when antennas were filed for, and what they're calling 5G now is about 5.9 gigahertz, and so they put them on antenna on telephone poles. They call them. One brand is Cantennas, a can on top of a pole. And if you go into Burlington, you'll see them. You'll see them in Stowe. There's some in, I think, St. Johnsbury. I don't know how widespread they are. Those were the sorts of things that were envisioned to be like, every 100 feet or something. But they aren't the highest frequency, those millimeter wave frequencies. It's still concerning because when we first started looking at these things, where in the Senate Finance Committee, which has jurisdiction over the telecom issues, the companies would come in, and then I remember the chair saying, so we're not going to see 5G in Vermont anytime soon. And then I started downloading all these applications by AT&T, talking about that this is this is our 5G effort. So little disconnect there. So what we really need in our legislature is we need to get someone who will introduce a bill and who will provide some leadership on this issue, which we just haven't had. And it's been really bleak. And whenever you would bring up cell service, or telecom, or antennas, or towers, the response was always, we're federally preempted, there's nothing we can do. Mm. And that's not true, although Congress is doing more and more and more to restrict what states and towns can do. We still do have control over siting, and in particular of towers. In Vermont, antennas are pretty much a rubber stamp, although if towns do put language into their bylaws that address antenna siting, that is possible. But then the regulatory process is the approval is at the Public Utility Commission, and so it will have to be done in a way that they will give substantial deference to it if it's not where people want it. So I'm seeing, like in California, towns are putting together bylaws that say that they have to be 100 feet from, these are these canister-type antennas, they have to be 100 feet from a house or something like that. So there are standards and setbacks that can be put into bylaws, but it's a very tough topic.
Right. Right. Although I just found a quote of yours here that I wanted to share. One thing that you said in this article about you winning Vermonter of the Year in this Burlington Free Press article, I think you said, "The thing I've learned through 17 years of working with the Vermonters is to never underestimate Vermonters." So,
and in particular, I don't underestimate the intelligence of Vermonters.
Right. It's amazing what folks, you know, the tenacity and how deep they'll dig, and when it comes to protecting their neighbors and caring for each other.
And then we get called NIMBYs, not in my backyard, when Vermont is everyone's backyard. I mean, and if we're not protecting our own communities, it's fascinating. It doesn't matter what the topic is. When I go into communities and meet with people, they know more about everything that's going on than anybody from outside. And so that's the resource. And I honor and am very proud of the people who step up to speak out against things. I mean, a lot of our work involves inappropriate developments, often very large developments, large farms. We are notorious for having taken on the industrial wind turbines. In fact, there was one project proposed for Northfield Ridge back in 2009, 2010. I assisted with that one.
Huh.
Yes, that was fascinating.
Was that? How come? Why you say?
Well, that area is home of the people who came to the area with Northern Power Systems, which was a wind energy small turbine company. And so there was a certain amount of local bias in favor of the wind turbines. But at the same time, there was knowledge that, for instance, the mountain to the west presented a problem for the winds that come off and affect Northfield Ridge, so it would be turbulent winds, and wind turbines don't do well in turbulent winds. But we put on a forum in Waitsfield, and then another one in Northfield, and a lot of this is about education.
Yeah.
So really, that's a lot of what I do, whether it's a cell tower or solar panels or a large farm, is learning as much as possible. Really, my expertise is as a researcher, and then helping people understand how they can be effective in addressing it.
Yeah, and that's something I'm really getting excited about being at the State House this year, is I see folks teaming up, you know, this intersectionality of hunters and homeschoolers and, you know, everybody, you know, even environmentalists, you know, folks coming to the table because we have this overlapping instinct to preserve and protect.
The pandemic did some really good things regarding the legislature and some really bad things. The good thing is how public it all is now.
Yeah.
So everything is on YouTube. You can go back. It's archived. It's really amazing access. In the past, we used to go in and video record. We would get audio recordings if we weren't there in person. The committee people, the legislators, hated it that we video recorded.
Yes, I know. I remember. Oh my God.
And so, but the bad thing that's happened is that citizens' access to legislative testimony has really declined. And it used to be that the average citizen could ask to be heard and be heard. And what we're seeing more and more is what some of us call kabuki theater, where the outcome is predetermined and the testimony is really just for show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they'll tweak things here and there, but in the end, the legislation has already been designed, and people are, you know, the legislators are just going through the motions to get it through. And that's really not good democracy. Mm. So this past session was very, very challenging in terms of trying to have any effect at all. We did succeed in shutting down one bill that had to do with the Renewable Energy Vermont's effort to eliminate aesthetics as part of the criteria and to make it so that neighbors could only participate on public health and safety and traffic. And that would have been in Section 248, which is the siting for electric generation projects. The telecom statute is Section 248A, which is a different statute, and it wouldn't have affected that. But it shows you the threat that developers feel about the public participating.
Right, and that's where, you know, where our power is, where we have to hold on to it. And that's an interesting form of censorship, right? Not allowing testimony. And so as we're, you know, find ourselves more and more on these canceled sides of the discussion, you know, mm-hmm. we're just trying to talk about, you know, health and beauty and all those things and our neighbors' rights. But we're having a hard time getting to the microphone. But what I'm finding is more and more of us are excluded, we're finding each other instead.
Yeah.
You know?
There needs to be some sort of an uprising of some sort. People have got to, speak up. I mean, the rallies that we've had at the press at the State House have been a beginning, but it is very challenging when, like on this issue of telecom, we really don't have any champions. And so, for instance, your area, I guess one of your reps isn't running again. So that's an opportunity to talk to people about what is of concern and what you would like to see done. Rather than, I mean, even the lobbyists this year, some longtime lobbyists were saying they'd never seen anything like what happened last year. And last year and the year before, it's the supermajority. And the attitude was, we know what we're doing, and we don't care what anybody else has to say. And so a lot of people, even, you know, many people that you probably wouldn't agree with, had the same experience. As long as it wasn't in lockstep with whatever leadership wanted, nobody was interested in hearing. Now, I'm sure there are exceptions, and I'm just speaking with a broad brush, but it is still something that... this supermajority has been not good for democracy.
Right. And now that those of us who have found each other, you know, through this pandemic and through the years now, after it, where we just keep finding ourselves on the opposite side, you know, of the power, how can we come together and not exclude each other? You know, how can we sit at the table with people who we don't necessarily, you know, totally agree with? I mean, this 5G issue, some folks have a hard time understanding it. I know I saw the results in schools. I'm a teacher, and I'm a health teacher, so I had across the spectrum all the different ages, all the different abilities coming through my classroom, and a number of years ago, they installed wireless. The wireless board was in the closet in my room, and I saw effects on kids. I saw them start to have, you know, they were hearing things, they were hearing voices, a few of them became paranoid. I mean, there were all sorts of bizarre impacts on the kids. So I've seen it with my own eyes, so I'm, you know, maybe, you know, from my experience. Well, for a lot of folks, it's invisible. They don't know what that means. But could they come to the table to hear from their neighbors with concerns? You know, could we all agree to at least do that?
Some of our best work has been exactly that. So, for instance, this mining company that wanted to open a mine a mile from my house... I started getting calls from people who lived around their production facility that's 25 miles away. And the result of that was that after a lot of challenging efforts where they totally denied that there were any issues, we ended up in a community-based stakeholder process. And it changed everything. And a few years ago, I heard that their plant manager was telling people that she made us a better company. We've done that with a couple of other corporations, too. I have reached out. I would like to sit down with the renewable energy industry and say, how can we do this differently?
Mm-hmm.
We are trying a little bit with Verizon is impossible. This industrial tower and wireless is impossible. They're both represented by the same attorney. But but the AT&T attorney is a little more open. So we are actually trying to do something a little different, at least with the PUC process for the Granville Tower. But in the end, you know, I've sat in on meetings where I've heard the Verizon guys say there are no health effects. And it's the same problem with the renewable energy industry. There are no issues. So, you know, you can't talk to people who won't admit there are problems, because if they admit there are problems, then oops.
Right. That's the one thing you can't say, the harms. What about their goals, like this lattice of towers in the middle of nowhere? I mean, I'm thinking of RFID chips and the cows. I mean, there may be a reason why we need them in rural areas.
There are some people in some of these areas who have said exactly the same thing. And, you know, what is this really about? Because it can't be about these WIP antennas up here. What is this really about? You know, is it the Chinese? I mean,
right. Well, and Barry's going smart. They just had a big, like, charrette last week. I really wanted to go to it, where they were describing the, you know, the smart development that they're going to be rebuilding Barrie now that
really,
it's been flooded.
Barrie already has some really toxic antennas. Montpelier does too. Burlington does too. The big cities in Vermont are some of the worst places in terms of exposure. And, you know, then those of us who live in areas that don't have coverage just pray it doesn't come. On the other hand, there's the satellites. There clearly is exposure, whether you want it or not. So I don't know. This has got to be the toughest topic I've ever worked on. Helping people have a voice in what goes on. And we actually were doing very well beginning in 2019. A group in Brattleboro reached out to me, and we put on this forum in the State House, and then the pandemic hit. And, I mean, we had several national and leading experts lined up to testify, and they were all pretty much shut down. And we have not seen anybody interested since. So that's, you know, what can people do? Well, I run a 501c3, so I'm not allowed to say or do anything to influence elections, but I can encourage people to run. The deadline for getting petitions in is the end of this month, I think May 31st. And that's the long time response I get when I complain, is people say, well, if you don't like it, then get different people in office.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is what it comes down to. So people who are interested and have the ability to do it should step up, get their petitions in. Running in the Democratic primary is probably the most effective thing to do, because not that many people vote, and so it's a lot easier to get candidates in.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Annette. Wow, an hour just flew by. We could definitely talk more, but I appreciate your time on this Sunday, and I appreciate all the work you've done over the years to help Vermonters. Any final thoughts in the last
Well, I just want to thank you for doing this series of programs. It's such an important topic, and it's refreshing to hear what you've been doing. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we're doing all we can to help each other.
And it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yes, you too. I'm really honored to be here in Vermont with you, Annette. Thank you for everything you're doing. I hope to meet you in person someday at the State House, probably.
Well, I try and stay away from there, but okay.
Oh, do you? Oh, okay. We'll meet somewhere else then.
Be glad to come to Warren.
Yes, all right. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
All right. Happy, beautiful May Day.
Thank you, Amy. You have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we were speaking with Annette Smith from Vermonters for a Clean Environment. Thanks for joining me for this episode of the 5-H Show. You guys have a great one. I'll be back next week. Well, no, I'm next week. I have Louise Turner, a pre-recorded show planned for you. You're in good hands. Have a great one. Bye.